heard the call to build your small business? Make it happen with a .net domain name, the place for dreamers for 30 years and counting. Visit keepdreamingup.net for tips and advice, whether you're just getting started or looking to grow. That's keepdreamingup.net.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of Locked On Clippers. I'm your host, Lucas Han. Today is Thursday, January 12th, 2017. And the Clippers, after last night's win against the Orlando Magic, are riding a five-game winning streak. That's right, we can call it a streak now. It's five games. So, you know, it's all good. Clippers winning, right? It was good when they won the other four games too. But what's extra good about tonight, what makes tonight a great night, or I suppose last night a great night, is that the Houston Rockets lost. They dropped a game against Minnesota. It was a winnable game. It was a one-point game at halftime. And Minnesota, for once, actually held on to a second-half lead and closed out the game. Now, the Clippers have obviously a lot of ground to make up to catch Houston for the three seed, but it's pretty imperative that they do so. And obviously, no matter how many games the Clippers lose, they have more losses than the Rockets, so they need the Rockets to lose some games too. They were five behind. Now the Rockets lost, and the Clippers were able to not mess up, and so the Clippers are now only four behind. The teams have two head-to-head matchups left, so presumably the Clippers are going to have to win both of those to have a chance. And then it's just about, in the coming weeks, in the coming couple of months, where do the Rockets lose two more games than the Clippers? Unfortunately, the Clippers have to play against Golden State twice, you know, coming up. They have to play them January 28th and then I believe February 2nd. So that's pretty brutal. It's pretty brutal to have to play those guys, you know, twice in a week span. But that's what makes tonight's nights like last night all the more important. You have to capitalize when Golden State leaves you an opening. You know, J.J. Redick had a great game last night. I think it's important to note, you know, because J.J. Redick, he scored 22 points, 7 of 16 from the field, 3 of 9 from deep. Isn't actually a great efficiency night from him. 22 is good, but it's not like a crazy high point total. But what I thought was really special for J.J. is that he had 6 rebounds and 5 assists. JJ's only had a handful of 25-5 games in his career, 20 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. And, you know, for all that he does on the court, he's not a very good rebounder. It's something that he's struggled with during his career, and he'll tell you that too. He'll openly admit that. And it's not that he's not a good passer or that he's selfish. It's just not part of his game, really, to create off of the dribble and find other guys. Tonight, he was able to get 5 assists, which is big. And he didn't have a turnover, too, which is awesome. You know, Austin Rivers, even though Austin Rivers had a little bit of a tougher night, he was 3 of 7 for 9 points, which isn't bad, but it's not great, you know. That's probably an average night for Austin, actually. But he had 5 assists and 4 rebounds. And Austin is another guy who, while the assists we might hope that he'd be able to get some, it's really been a weakness for a guy who's an athletic guard. He doesn't rebound very well. He doesn't go get the ball. And 4 rebounds isn't crazy, but you get 4 rebounds from a guard, that's a pretty good night. And the Clippers won the rebounding battle tonight, 49-35. Obviously, it's on the back of DeAndre Jordan, who had 20 rebounds, and seems like he's having 20 rebounds pretty much every night in the last couple of weeks. But getting that extra 4 from JJ, or extra 4 from Austin, extra 6 from JJ, that helps. 3 from Raymond Felton. That right there, those 13 rebounds, the Clippers won the rebounding battle by 14, and they got 13 from JJ, Austin, and Raymond. Now, what's interesting to me is, you know, the Clippers only won this game by 9, and 9 is a fine margin. It's not like winning a game by 9 is bad, but it was probably closer than that until the last couple of minutes when the Clippers really, they hit a few dagger threes. JJ had one in the last couple minutes. Chris had one in the final minute that really put this game out of reach for the Magic. And it probably shouldn't have been that close. Like I said, the Clippers won the rebounding battle by double digits. Clippers shot 51% from the floor. Orlando only shot 42%. The Clippers shot 35% from deep, which is fine. It's not as good. You know, it's not what they'd expect. 34.6 isn't normal, but it's only a little below normal. It's not something crazy. And Orlando was cold. They were only 6 of 27 from deep, 22%. So how did the Clippers almost lose this game? It was with turnovers. The Clippers had 21 turnovers to Orlando's 13. The Clippers attempted 76 field goals to Orlando's 92. That's crazy. 16 extra field goals attempted. And yeah, a few of them are made up for, you know, there's always going to be some variance because of free throws. The Clippers shot 8 more free throws, so that might be 4 more possessions. So instead of 16 field goals, it's 12 field goals, roughly. And then you have some end-of-quarter stuff where possessions can get out of whack. But that's a lot. That's a lot of extra possessions. 16 more field goals attempted. I mean, just look at it this way. Orlando had 16 more field goals, and they made the same amount. 60 more field goals attempted and the same amount made as the Clippers. So if the Clippers had had 16 more possessions, they would have blown Orlando out of the water because 16 more possessions would have been 17 or 18 more points. And now instead of a 9-point game, we're talking about a 26, 27-point game. That's something that I think they're going to have to watch, especially. Maybe not so much against the Lakers on Saturday, not saying that they should overlook them because the Clippers without Blake Griffin can't really overlook anyone, and the Clippers, where they are in the standings right now, can't overlook. They need to win pretty much every game, especially the winnable games. They can't have any more slip-ups against under 500 teams. But where it'll really hurt them to be playing sloppy like this is Monday against the Oklahoma City Thunder, because I think the Clippers have a real chance to head into that January 28th game against the Warriors with 11 straight wins if they can get over the hump in this Oklahoma City game on Monday. And I know that makes it easy to overlook the Lakers game on Saturday because you think, okay, the way we're playing that, you know, Clippers will take care of the Lakers. They have a tough contest and then they have a handful of games that they can also take care of. They got to focus on that tough contest. But first, you have to take care of the Lakers. The Lakers already beat the Clippers on Christmas. I think especially now that the Lakers roster is almost completely turned over from the last time that there was really animosity between these two teams, I don't think it's a huge deal to them personally. It's probably not as important to the players as we think it is to the fans because everyone's got a coworker or a neighbor or a cousin who's a Lakers fan and the trash talk and all that. But I think it's a game you have to win just for standings. Just forget about any sort of rivalry, any sort of crosstown bitterness, division, conference, whatever. You have to win the game for the standings. You have to take care of business against this team. You already dropped one against them, and it's a game you should win. It's a series that you should sweep. You should beat this team 4 times out of 4. Yeah, it's understandable you lose once to them when you're hurt, but you can't lose a second game to them. If you're going to try to catch Houston for that 3 seed, you can't. Now, the good news is, I mentioned Blake Griffin in there. In Doc's pregame press conference today, he gave his first hint about Blake, and it sounds like Blake is going to be back roughly within the time frame that the Clippers had originally set for him after his surgery. So it's been just over 3 weeks since Blake's surgery. The original time frame was 3 to 6 weeks, and then the day after the surgery, they updated that to 4 to 6 weeks. So we're just past the 3-week mark, and Doc said in his press conference last night, yeah, it's looking like the 4 to 5 week range is when the Clippers are going to be able to get Blake back. Now, the earliest that I can figure they'd actually be able to put him on the court based off of that would be in the game on the on January 19th against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Before that, I think it's just too soon. I don't think, it just wouldn't, it wouldn't be sufficient rest for Blake. You don't want to rush him back. You saw how hesitant the Clippers already were with Chris Paul's hamstring injury. So I don't think they're going to try to rush Blake back or anything like that. But I could see the Clippers play Monday against Oklahoma City. That's a tough game. Then they have Tuesday, Wednesday off to practice. You bring Blake back Thursday, and then you go on that road trip and you take Blake with you on that 5-game road trip. I could see it. I could see him returning as early as January 19th. Hopefully, if not then, at least at some point during that 5-game road trip. Now, if you want to see Blake Griffin when he comes back, SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for the games that you want to see up close and in person this season. There's nothing like being at the game for the biggest plays of the year, and with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the seats you want for a great value. SeatGeek has the best deals on every ticket in the house, wherever you want to sit, whether that's courtside, the club seats, or the upper level. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats for any game this season. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. Price can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find you the lowest available price. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. What's best of all is that my listeners get a $20 rebate for their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the Settings tab and click Add a Promo Code, enter promo code LO Clippers, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you made your first purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LO Clippers today. So, I just want to, in the sort of the second half of the episode, closing this out, I want to go in the weeds a little bit and look at some of the Clippers performances in this last Orlando game and sort of project, kind of keep track of how these players are going, because there's a few important things I think. I don't think it really is crucial that a guy like Raymond Felton had 8 points. I mean, his role is what his role is going to be, and he's been playing well. But there are some people where I think it matters. I think it's noteworthy that DeAndre Jordan had 20 rebounds again, because he's having 20 rebounds a ton, and he's moved into top 10 in 20 rebound games, tied with Kevin Garnett for ninth, passing Shaquille O'Neal, who he was tied with before tonight. Chris Paul continues to look healthy and continues to say he feels good from that hamstring sprain. So that's excellent. That's always, of course, excellent news. I think it might be a little good for everyone that Austin Rivers didn't have an amazing night tonight. He didn't have a bad night, but he was himself. And maybe even a little better than himself, even though he didn't score super well. He didn't take a ton of shots. He only took 7 shots. He got assists. He got rebounds. And I think if Austin becomes a guy who thinks that he's going to go score 25 points every night, it might put a little too much of a strain on this team's offense as far as finding enough touches for everyone, getting everyone the ball, especially when Blake Griffin is back. So I think it's good. It's really good to see a guy like Austin go for 28, go for 24, come back tonight, not have an amazing game, but only take 7 shots. And then maybe he'll come out in the Clippers next game and have 20 points again and have the most shots of anyone on the team. It varies, but that's one thing that has, not last night, but over the years has frustrated me with Jamal Crawford is if Jamal could make his good nights the 7 of 11 nights and his bad nights 1 of 5, his efficiency would be pretty good. But for every 7 of 11 night that he has a 1 of 12 game, a 3 of 15 game, and he's had games like that in the last couple weeks. So it's good to see Austin only take 7 shots, even though he played 33 minutes. He only took 7 shots. 2 turnovers. Obviously, you'd rather not have those 2 turnovers, but it's not insane for a guard to have two turnovers in 33 minutes. Now, what's bad is that Chris Paul had 5. But I don't think we need to read too much into Chris Paul's 5 turnovers. You know, he was asked about that after the game because someone brought up that he had 18 assists and only 1 turnover on Sunday. But today he had 6 assists and 5 turnovers. And Chris's comment, literally his reply was, "It sucks being human." You know, human beings have good days and bad days. And that's kind of how it goes. Jamal Crawford, who we've been monitoring closely, and if you are as obsessive as I am, you'll know that pretty much everyone in the Clippers sphere has been talking about his poor play in the last few days, especially following a really dismal performance on Sunday. He was okay tonight. 9 points on 6 shots, 3 of 6 from the field. He got fouled on a 3-pointer, made all 3 free throws. Just to be fair to the Orlando Magic, he didn't really get fouled on that 3-pointer, but he sold it pretty well, so he got the free throws. He had 4 assists. Here's the problem. 25 minutes, 0 rebounds, 4 assists, but 5 turnovers. It's just not great. It's not great. And so even though some shots fell, he still probably had a net negative game today. You think about, he took 6 shots, but he had 5 turnovers, so that's really 11 possessions to get to his 9 points. And the assists help. It's definitely, you know, 4 assists is almost redeeming. 4 assists might be the best thing on that stat line. 9 points isn't, you know, it's below Jamal's average. 5 turnovers is obviously bad, but 4 assists is good. One thing that I really like is seeing people other than Chris Paul getting assists for this Clippers team, because it shows that the ball is moving, and it shows that, you know, when Chris Paul is on one side of the floor, they can swing it to the weak side and someone else can make a play. When Chris Paul is sitting on the bench getting rest, someone else can make a play. Austin Rivers getting assists, JJ Redick getting assists, Jamal Crawford getting assists. That helps this basketball team. It makes their offense more dynamic. And Raymond Felton actually didn't have an assist last night, but he's another guy who's, Raymond Felton has been out there getting assists. And that's important for the Clippers because Wesley Johnson, it's not his game. Brandon Bass, it's not his game. Luke Mbamute, not his game. DeAndre Jordan, not his game. Even Mo Spates, you know, he doesn't really get a ton of assists. So with Blake Griffin out, and then hopefully even when Blake Griffin does come back, having these other guys, aside from Chris Paul, able to get assists, keep the ball moving, score when someone besides Chris Paul is creating, and when those other guys aren't only creating for themselves. I think that's important. And you know, you see it in a guy like Mo Spates, who he couldn't get a shot in the first 3 quarters. And you know, if Mo doesn't have an attempt in 3 quarters, it's not that he didn't shoot, it's that he couldn't get a shot. Because Mo likes to shoot the basketball. He really likes to shoot the basketball. But when he finally got it in the 4th quarter, when they were able to find him, he had 7 points early in the quarter, which helped swing the game from a 1-point deficit to help build up a little bit of a buffer when Chris Paul came back into the game. He finished the quarter with 13 points on 5 of 6 shooting and 3 of 4 from deep. That's huge. To get 13 points from your backup center, in a game is great. To get 13 fourth quarter points from your backup center is like unheard of. It's so good. And then you look at him, and now he's shooting 39% from deep on the season. And you just have to be wondering, how can we get this guy the ball more? And fortunately, that's a good volume. He's taking 3.5 threes a game. He's making 1.3 threes a game. These guys, you know, the backup guards are being able to find him. And I feel like last year's team, or at least last year's team in the Knights when Pablo Prigioni didn't play, and it was Austin Rivers and Jamal Crawford running the backcourt by themselves, they would have had trouble finding a guy like Mos Bates to get him 4 3-point attempts in a game. They haven't. They've been able to do that this year consistently. Just looking through the last few games, 4 attempts, 5 attempts, 5 attempts, 4 attempts, 2 attempts. That's what you want to see because he's a good shooter, 39%. Get him shots. They've been able to do that. And I also think it's worth noting that Paul Pierce continues to be out of the rotation, even when the Clippers have been extra shorthanded, down to 9 guys. He still hasn't seen an appearance. He's only played in 12 games this year. He's played badly in those 12 games, really badly. But he's hasn't played in the Clippers' last 5 games now. He hasn't played a single second during this winning streak. And, you know, hopefully Doc keeps him off the floor going forward. And it's not an anti-Paul Pierce thing. I don't have any personal beef with Paul Pierce. I was a big fan of his game when he was a good player earlier in his career, but it's just for the sake of this team. You know, as long as Doc can set aside that relationship and keep Paul on the bench, it's better for the team. If Paul Pierce could play basketball, I'd love for him to be on the court. Because Wesley Johnson hasn't been great. The Clippers could use another guy at that combo forward position, but Paul Pierce just hasn't been able to play at an NBA level in the year and a half that he's been with the Clippers. As long as he's out of the rotation, the team is better for it. Now, the last thing I want to mention in today's episode is Diamond Stone. Obviously, Diamond Stone, Clippers picked him in the second round of the draft. He's been up and down in the D-League. He was with the Santa Cruz Warriors and then back with the Clippers. Now he's with the Salt Lake City Stars. Now, Diamond, interestingly enough, in the D-League, hasn't seen the court in the last 4 games. Did not play coach's decision 4 games in a row as a guy who the Clippers assigned to the D-League. Now, Doc kind of did a little bit of double talk on this. So when Doc sent him down, there was a question about it in the press conference, and Doc answered that right now Diamond wasn't going to be getting minutes on the real Clippers, the Clippers NBA team. Diamond wasn't going to be able to get minutes. So by sending him down, he was going to be able to get playing time. And Doc said, what's important to me is that he gets a chance to play, that he gets to get out on the court and play basketball. So now 4 straight games in the D-League that he's been did not play coach's decision. And I asked Doc about it tonight. And Doc said, well, it's a learning experience for him. He has to learn that he has to earn minutes. You know, wherever he goes, and he said, Doc said that a lot of NBA guys go down to the D-League and they feel that, you know, the D-League is going to be all about them and the team is going to play around them and it's all about them. And it's not, you know, the D-League coaches are trying to win games. And that's true. And it's fair, I think. And there's certainly a side to it where Diamond may, you know, I'm going to be fully honest. I haven't watched the Salt Lake City Stars play. I've seen Diamond's stats. They look fine. But if he's been hurting the team and not playing well, that's entirely plausible. I'm not saying that that's not the case. But the entire point of the D-League is to develop players for the NBA. Now, the Salt Lake City Stars coach has no duty to play Diamond Stone. The Clippers don't own the Salt Lake City Stars, so he has no attachment to Diamond Stone other than if Diamond Stone can help him win some basketball games, and if he feels like Diamond Stone isn't doing that, then he has no reason to play him. But that creates a problem for the Clippers because it's not, you know, if you send your son to a high school team and you tell the coach you'd rather that he play JV so that he can get experience and playing time because he was riding the bench on varsity. That's fine. He goes down to JV, he gets experience and playing time. Then if he doesn't play on JV, you know, that's that. Unless you think that he's getting unfair treatment. But the point of the JV team is not to star your son. In the NBA, Diamond Stone is a business asset. Aside from being a person and a player and a kid that the Clippers are trying to develop, he's a business asset. And the Clippers need to protect their business asset from an organizational standpoint. And right now, because he's not playing minutes in the D League, it's not like he's sitting on the Clippers bench. He's sitting on the Salt Lake City Stars bench in the NBA D League. It's mismanaging an asset. And it's stunting his development to not be put him in situations where maybe he's not helping the team. Maybe if he was the star of a D-League team or the starting center of a D-League team, they would be the worst team in the development league. Maybe. But the Clippers don't really care how good Diamond's D-League team is. The Clippers care how much experience and development Diamond is being able to get. That's why the Clippers need to have their own D-League team. And I feel like this is something we've talked about for a few years. And, you know, I talked about it last year because the Clippers were sending down CJ Wilcox and Brandon Dawson, and they were playing for separate teams, and they were switched around to different teams and called back up for two games and sent down and getting assigned to a different team. And they're playing in all these different systems. You know, aside from not being the Clippers system, they're changing around to different D-League teams throughout the year. Their roles are changing. The players that they're playing with are changing. And it's not really preparing them to potentially become a role player on the Clippers, as well as playing for an actual junior Clippers team would, where you're playing with the Clippers coaching staff in the Clippers system in a controlled environment where they know they're getting you minutes. And I don't know. It's really frustrating to see them mismanage an asset like this. Because if the team really believes in Diamond Stone, the best way to get him to succeed is to build a D-League team around him. You can basically do everything. You can control every single step of the process to make this team be the perfect incubator for Diamond Stone's NBA career. But they just don't want to spend the money on it. Or they don't want to set up the organization. Or I don't know. I don't know why they're not doing it, other than the fact that it costs money. But Steve Ballmer has spent a ton of money on stuff, so that doesn't exactly make sense to me. And it's not, you know, I'm not calling the organization cheap because I don't think that's fair with how Steve Ballmer has managed the team. But in this instance, maybe they are being cheap. I don't know. But it's really disheartening to see him getting did not play coach's decision in the D League when. Yeah, maybe the, you know, if the Clippers revived the Bakersfield Jam, maybe the Bakersfield Jam would have lost every single game this season. But Diamond's getting post touches against quality opponents. He's learning how to handle double teams. And the Clippers don't give a damn if their D-League team wins games or not. If the coach of the D-League team, if his assignment from the Clippers is to play Diamond minutes, there you go. You play Diamond minutes. You don't worry about the win-loss. You're like Brett Brown with the Philadelphia 76ers right now. They don't care if the Sixers win games. They care that their young guys get to play more. They get to develop. And, you know, when Utah sends players down to the Salt Lake City Stars, the Utah Jazz own the Salt Lake City Stars, Utah's players play tons of minutes for the Salt Lake City Stars. But Salt Lake City, you know, their coach doesn't have any... He doesn't owe anything to the Los Angeles Clippers. He doesn't owe anything to Diamond Stone. So it sucks. It sucks for Diamond. It sucks for the Clippers. It sucks for everyone who has a stake in the Clippers because one of their assets, Diamond Stone, isn't being managed as well as he could be managed. And my thing is, fine, even if it's fair that he's being benched with the Stars, and I'm not saying that it's not fair. Maybe he deserves it, and certainly the Stars coach has no obligation to play him. But even if that's just an unavoidable reality, that right now, even if you want to get a D-League team in the future, you don't have your own team now, the team that you sent him to won't play him, why not switch him to a different team? Doc says that he has to learn this lesson and earn minutes. Well, why not bring him back up so that he can at least be practicing with your team? Because if he's not going to be playing game minutes, wouldn't you rather have him in a Clippers practice than a Salt Lake City Stars practice? Wouldn't you have him working with KG than, you know, whoever's running the practices for the Stars? I guarantee you it's not Kevin Garnett. I guarantee you it's not Doc Rivers or Sam Cassell. Wouldn't you rather have him going through your game plan, going through your shoot around, listening to your halftime adjustments, learning what it's like to be a Clipper if he's not going to be even be able to get minutes in the D League? That seems like the case to me. It really does. So it's just kind of, it's confusing. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me why they're choosing to manage one of their assets and really their only young prospect, because Bryce Johnson isn't that young and is out for the rest of eternity with this back injury. So their only young prospect, they're not really managing responsibly, in my opinion. But rant over on something that's relatively minor. Truly, it is minor. Because it's a winning streak, so all is forgiven, right? We'll worry about Diamond Stone maybe when Diamond Stone's time comes. It would be nice if the Clippers were worrying about him now so that he would be more prepared when his time comes. But we'll be back tomorrow with a new episode, probably getting ready a little bit for the Lakers game on Saturday, because then we're taking the weekend off. Obviously, every weekend off, Monday through Friday episodes. Then Monday, we'll be back to talk about the big Oklahoma City game Monday night. Just a brief side note to wrap it up. I live currently in New York City. I go to school at St. John's University, but I've been in LA for the last few weeks with my parents because I'm from LA, from Santa Clarita, and I've been able to cover the Clippers in person and be credentialed at 7 of the last 8 home games. There was one game I couldn't make it to, but 7 of the 8 home games while I was here, I was able to cover the team and be credentialed. And, you know, on first of all, it's amazingly cool and awesome as a Clippers fan to go to the games, to meet the other reporters, to sit in on the press conferences and ask questions. It's also incredibly rewarding for me as someone who has been, I hesitate to use the word journalist because I don't take myself that seriously, but a sports writer or a reporter or whatever you want to call it, someone who's been doing this for, I think now 5 years, it's pretty gratifying to act like a real reporter and sit in the press conferences and be able to do more than just secondhand stuff based on other people's reporting. And Clippers PR has been great. Clippers PR is classy as all hell. And yeah, you know, the Clippers organization has been great, but really it's the PR side that I deal with that they've been excellent. So it's been a lot of fun. It's been great to be back and to cover the team. But last night against Orlando was my last game in Los Angeles this season. I'm going back to New York. If the Clippers are in the second round, I might be back in like mid to late May for the end of the second round or maybe the Western Conference Finals. And maybe I can get credentialed for those games, maybe not. But for now, I'm just super grateful to have been able to cover the games that I have. And I think it's been reflected probably in the output of my work. I think the quality has been good because I've been able to ask the questions that I want to ask. So yeah, we'll be back tomorrow with my last California episode of Locked On Clippers before I head back to New York on Saturday. Thanks for listening, guys. This is Lucas Hand logging off for Locked On Clippers.
iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.